You're listening to Stream Wars, your source for everything there is to know about the global live streaming industry. Here we'll share insights and trends gleaned from interviews with top streamers, experts, and industry professionals. And now your host, VP of Live Streaming at The Meet Group and former professional live streamer, Lauren Hallinan.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Stream Wars. Today, we're discussing a different side of live streaming that we don't usually cover on this podcast, and that is how live streaming is being used by the entertainment industry to augment TV shows, market movies, take people backstage at events, and help celebrities grow their audiences. My guest today is Roberto Quinn, who is a social producer out in Hollywood. It is his job to help entertainment companies and celebrities plan and produce their social strategies, and that often includes live streaming. Roberto and I talk about the growing trend of what is called the second screen experience and why live streaming is being used more and more in Hollywood. He also shares what makes a good live streaming show and that viewer interaction should be a core part of any live streaming show, not an afterthought. He says that the producers should let viewers help shape the contents of the show, and he shares some ways to do that. He also shares what makes a good live streaming host and how to select talent. We also talked about whether or not a show needs to involve a lot of production, and he thinks that shows do not need to be overly produced, but it's very important that they have a bit of structure and provide clear value to the audience. I found it really interesting to hear Roberto's perspective, and I think many of the suggestions he shares can be applied to other forms of live streaming and other contexts as well. Before we get started, I just want to remind you, if you haven't already, please take a moment to rate and review the show on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. And now, on to my interview with Roberto Quinn. Hi, Roberto. Welcome to the Stream Wars podcast. I'm really excited to have you on today. I think, we met each other at a Streaming Media West conference this past Yes. November. And, I found on our panel that you and I had a lot of kind of similarities in our experiences and the way that we think about live streaming. But then at the same time, we have a lot of differences because I think, the way that you're doing live streaming, you're over there in Hollywood, doing more, TV and event style live streaming. So I thought we had some, interesting, different perspectives. And so I'm excited to have you on the podcast today because I don't think we've really talked, too much on the podcast about the type of live streaming experience that you have. So I would love it if you could just kick things off by introducing yourself and telling us how live streaming is a part of your business today.
Well, I want to start off with saying thank you. I am so happy to be on the podcast with you. I'm very excited. And yes, you're right. We did have a lot of similarities in our little Venn diagram of digital experience. And I started a company called Quinn Social Media Management about 5 years ago. I was the head of social media at TMZ for about 3 years, and then I knew that I wanted to work in digital in the entertainment space. So I branched off and started my own company and started consulting with different companies and also with different TV shows and movies now. I worked on my first big feature film as a digital producer this year, which was really, really great. But basically, streaming is really important. Live streaming is a really important part of my business just because you're able to get a little more in depth with the celebrities and with the TV shows than you normally would with just content on Facebook or Instagram. And you get a chance at really diving into something that's beyond surface level, which everyone's kind of aching for now because everyone has an Instagram account, everyone has a Facebook account. So what sets you apart is doing a little bit of live streaming and making yourself more available. Mm-hmm. So I was the digital producer for a second screen experience for a major TV show. And basically, I put together 2 hours worth of fun segments and things where we would have celebrities come up and play games and do interviews. And we had a host that was incredible. And I think that there was a lot of learning from that experience that I was able to take on then to other clients. And I think the most important part of the experience was seeing how differently people live stream. Like, there's so many different ways that people do it. And I think doing it how we did it, there was a lot of things that I could share with other people. So I'm glad that you brought me on so that I can share those experiences. And I know that you have a layout here that we're going to follow. So, yeah.
But I would love to, dive in a little bit to kind of what you just said. What do you kind of mean by, you know, there's different ways that people could do it? Could you elaborate a little bit on that point?
Absolutely. So you have fully produced live streams, which are with a host, you have usually a set, and you have produced segments. You also have people who live stream from, let's say, events or influencer live streaming, which is a lot more casual. And I think the one thing that they have in common that most people don't really take into consideration that should is that you are speaking directly to someone sitting there watching you on their couch, right? So that's the difference. I think that's something that we learned along the way with our digital show was how important it was to speak directly to your audience versus like a broadcast TV show where you're speaking to a wide public. And this is more personalized because, let's face it, most people are watching this on a mobile device. So when you're that close to someone, you're literally in their hand. For you to be saying, hey, everyone at home, do this, or hey, everyone at home, like, we want to know what you have to say, you don't have that – you don't establish that connection that you should be establishing with a viewer. You really need to be more personal than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in that case, how would you suggest that people address the audience instead?
I think now from then until now, I always sit down with the hosts and with the cameramen as well and kind of give them a little rundown saying, listen, I know that if you have experience in television, if you have experience hosting large events and things, you're used to speaking to a wider audience. And the key here is treating the camera as if it were your niece, nephew, brother, sister, someone close that is literally right in front of you. So you're able to then speak directly to someone in a personal tone versus saying, here's the example. Hey, everyone, we want to know what the best thing about tonight was for you. All right, so that is okay for television, but for someone that's holding a phone 4 inches from their face, that doesn't feel very personal. So I always talk to the hosts, especially, to look directly into that camera as if it were someone that they knew or a friend and saying, hey, man, or, you know, hey, guys, I really want to know. Tonight was really great. What are some of the things that you took out of tonight? What was the best thing that you saw? So it turns something it breaks the fourth wall. So it turns something that's impersonal and kind of general into a conversation between two people. And I think that that sets you up for success.
Yes, I totally agree. Right. And it's something, a very little detail that people might not think about, but it sets such a different tone. And you know, even like, I don't know, I guess it depends on the type of platform that you're using, but you know, sometimes you can also see comments from users, and I'm sure, you know, especially you could call out people's names, things like that, you know, makes them feel even closer to what's going on.
Absolutely. And I work with a lot of different companies that have social interaction tools. And I think Tagboard has to be one of my favorites. Not only is their team excellent there, but they are really kind of on the forefront of what social producers need to produce a good show and make people feel involved. Because social producers now, and I think people are finally starting to realize the value that it's not just, hey, you're uploading photos to Instagram, or hey, you're, you know, doing a, you know, when Periscope was a thing, you know, doing a 10-minute Periscope. It's more involved than that. And they're recognizing that, and especially with the tools that we have at our disposal now, we can create robust segments and robust shows that really integrate the viewer at home and make them feel like they're a part of this show, because truly they are. Like that is what we're moving into. People want their opinions heard. People want to be a part of their favorite shows, and this is allowing them to. That's one of the things I love about live streaming.
Completely. Yeah. So I want to step back a little bit, because, you know, we got super into it. Like, I love what we've been talking about. But I want to take a moment and kind of step back. And you kind of already talked about it a little bit. But what are your thoughts on live streaming versus broadcast, you know, in our modern society? You know, everyone's looking at their cell phones. You know, what are kind of the disadvantages, advantages of the two types of media? And do you see a shift in what people want to consume?
That's a very interesting question. So I think there are so many people, especially here in Hollywood, that jump on a bandwagon. And I think right now it's broadcast is dead, broadcast is dead. I think there's always room for broadcast and there's room for live streaming. But I do think that there's an enormous shift into live streaming and into more mobile-based entertainment, which is obvious because you see now Facebook has Facebook Watch. And now, whereas you started out having only Netflix as an option, now you have Netflix, Hulu, HBO, Showtime on Demand, CBS, like everyone has their own app where they're providing you with content. Now, that's obviously not live streaming content, but I say that just to kind of paint the picture that live streaming is in that general area. Like you're competing now also with those types of shows, but the advantage that live stream has is you can supplement all of those shows. So they have, you know, like The Talking Dead. You have a bunch of different shows that are online that are live streaming that support that. Lip Sync Battle has it too. So it's interesting to see. They have a lot of pre-shows. They have a lot of second screen experiences, and you really are able to kind of have a fully produced show that's live streamed, or you could also have something that's a lot more casual, but you're still in that same competitive zone and you're able to reach those people who are already on mobile. I think it's a huge advantage. So broadcast isn't dead, but live streaming is definitely where most people should be putting their focus on.
Yeah, I think that's really good point to make. And I love the idea of it being supplemental, either simultaneous or before, after, you know. It's just a way to repurpose like the content. You know, we always, at least in the social media world, the marketing world, we always talk about like repurposing your content. You know, you create one really good piece of content and then you use it in lots of different ways across all these different platforms so that you really can get the most out of it. And it seems like what you're saying, you know, is that live streaming can be a way to repurpose the content that you're making for this broadcast show and really get a lot more out of it.
And be creative with it too. That's the thing. It's like you have the ability to be super creative because it is a live stream. You're not, unless you're doing a live stream series. Like I read something yesterday. I just watched a show called You on Netflix, which is like the big
I've
show.
I've heard of that. Yeah.
And then BuzzFeed did this 15 lingering questions that you still have about the show, which I think would be a funny topic for live streams. I think it would be really funny for someone to cover, like, all the weird things that happen in a show that never are addressed. You can have that as content. Like, there's just so much to be able to do through live streaming if you're doing it well.
Mm-hmm. So kind of in that vein, for these supplemental shows, what are people typically doing? Is it kind of talking about, is it like what you said, that they're, talking about aspects of the show? Are they talking about, like, are they just kind of discussing what happened in that show? Are they taking people, like, behind the scenes of the production or of what just happened? Like, what kind of content do they typically have?
And I'm seeing all of that, everything you mentioned and more. I'm seeing behind the scenes. I'm seeing sit downs with the cast sometimes. Some of the pre-tape shows, if they're not live, you have the actors come in if it's a pre-tape show, and you can have them scheduled in live one night a week or something. So every week you have a different cast member of the show to come talk about it. I know. What's the Reasons Why or whatever? The show on Netflix, 12 Reasons or something. Anyway, they have a show on Netflix. It's not a live stream, but there's potential to take that format into other TV shows. When you want to do it, you could do it live. I think I'm seeing behind the scenes, I'm seeing supplemental shows that kind of go into depth with the characters, and Game of Thrones has one where, they really talk about the episodes and things. So I think that there's an opportunity to do a lot of this stuff live, especially because that gives it a sense of urgency, right? So when you do something live, it's like, oh, wow, like I want to be one of the first ones to see this because I know that people are going to be talking about this. So I think a lot of people that, there's a missed opportunity here too, where a lot of these shows are pre-taping this stuff just because it'll be a nice look or they have access to the actors at that time. But they're missing out on engaging the audience. So like the Game of Thrones one has a huge social audience. I think they could be doing a live stream every week with a different actor and breaking down the scenes, or with a director. They already do that kind of HBO thing after the show, but there's no way to directly engage with that,
Right. And that completely leads me to the next topic that I wanted to talk about, was just that that live streaming creates, is an opportunity to create a closer connection with the audience. And like you're saying, they're already creating these supplemental programs, which are supposed to kind of, give you more of a glimpse of behind the scenes or what actors are thinking, all this, but they're kind of taking it, 80-90% there, because it's like, okay, here's supposed to be this like raw behind the scenes, but it's not really raw because it's still pre-taped and there's no way. I mean, if you just can add that element of the audience being able to like ask a question, or something, just interact in some way, that makes people feel just so much more interested in it. Like, I'm sure more people would watch it because they feel like, oh my God, I might have a chance to ask them a question,
And coming from a business perspective, listen, if you have that well-produced but live element with social interaction, sponsors will eat that up. There is so much money there too, where you're creating this content already and you're doing it with the idea of giving a little bit more to fans, but why not go the extra mile here and really interact with those people who are diehard supporters of a show? I think that there's a huge missed opportunity there, and then a lot of sponsor dollars that are being missed out on.
Definitely. So what can what can they be doing to make the audience feel more involved? You mentioned tag board or some other integrations, and you mentioned, one is just comments. What are some other things that they can do besides comments to interact with the audience?
Well, there's another tool that I've used in the past too, called Megaphone, and it creates live in-show polls. And there are some shows that have used it really well. Talking Dead really used Megaphone very well, and it shapes the conversation. So I know that they had one example is they had Conan O'Brien on the show, and then they asked the audience, and this is live. You can see the ticker kind of scrolling back and forth as people are voting until you lock the vote in. But you could see it, and it becomes a topic of conversation, right? So you can lead it into a question. So you don't have to have fully produced questions that you're asking directly to the host. You can ask the audience to vote on something and have the guest kind of interact with it as well. So the question there, I think, was, would Conan O'Brien survive a zombie apocalypse? And it was hilarious because you could see the people voting yes, no, yes, no. And then finally they all settled on no. And then Conan was like, I'm offended. And it created a whole funny conversation between him and Chris Hardwick. And it then as a user, you feel like you're being heard. You've shaped the conversation. This is your show. You have a hand in what's being said, what's being done. And I think that there's tremendous value in that.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of, you know, there have been lots of shows over the years where the in-studio audience, you know, will have the opportunity to vote on something. And this is a way of just opening up that feeling to everyone, not just people who can actually make it into the studio.
Exactly.
Is there anything that brands should avoid doing? I mean, you mentioned, you know, don't say, hey, everybody at home, you know, that you should try and be closer to them. Is there anything else that they should avoid doing that comes off as, you know, maybe distant or doesn't typically create a lot of engagement and interaction?
Absolutely. Yes, I have a laundry list of things, but I think they can be summed up by saying, don't belittle your audience.
Mm.
I think people shows tend to belittle their audience. A lot of them are still stuck in 2007, throwing up a tweet and letting it dissolve, and that's your social interaction. Great. People love seeing their names on TV or on a live stream. But there's no value. There's no added value anymore in that. Because there's so much now that you can do, it feels like it's almost a slap in the face to just throw something up, not acknowledge it, and basically have it as a throwaway. So I think people who live stream and shows who are live streaming should definitely set aside time in their rundowns for social interactions and social moments, and having maybe something like we just discussed with like the Talking Dead with Megaphone, having something that the users at home feel like they've shaped your show, because no one feels like they shaped your show if you threw up a tweet. I love this. What a great job. Thumbs up. Like, they're not adding any value at all. And we're so far past that now, where you can vote on things, you can submit photos, you can do so much. You can Skype with Skype with people who are viewing at home. So I think there are so many different levels of interaction now that it should be taken into consideration when you are kind of putting together what social elements would be a part of the show.
Yeah, that is a really great point. Again, it's a small, subtle thing that people might not be thinking that way. It's just a mindset shift.
Exactly.
To make the the social aspect, the interactive aspect of it be a core part and be planned into it as opposed to an afterthought of, oh, let's just show up, you know, slap some usernames of people watching on the bottom of the screen and they'll feel like we're appreciating them.
And I think that comes from the top down, honestly. And that's why, you know, I said this in our panel, I think digital producers and social media producers need to be brought on from the beginning. Because if you're creating a show, and I mean this for any show now, if you're creating a show where there's no, at no point do you have, at no point of conception do you have a digital producer or a social media producer around, then you're missing out on the potentially engaging pieces of the show. So you don't need necessarily, let's say, Ray Donovan or something like that from on Showtime. I'm not talking about bringing you on from the script passing around and trying to get that greenlit, right? But I'm talking about when you've decided, when a network has decided to launch a show, to bring in a digital expert to kind of help shape the strategy and set the precedent from the get-go of what kind of user interactions there are going to be and what elements we can bring to the table. For example, a second screen experience, or you know, one of those types of talk shows that, you know, you talk to the cast after the show. You need to have someone from the get-go kind of help lay the land.
Got it. And shouldn't be an afterthought anymore. It needs to stop being an afterthought. Yeah, 2019. It needs to be an integral part of your promotional and marketing and the entire process. If you really want to get the most out, you know, you're throwing that much money at producing this, you want to get the most out of it.
Yeah. And that being said too, I know that we're not talking about this in depth, but influencers, bringing in influencers to be in your show just because they have a high following, that's also not working. Like, you need to have, they need to have a reason to be there. They need to have talent. There are so many more layers now. And I think a lot of people quickly jumped on the bandwagon to just get influencers on shows that are now canceled. Yeah, they might have had 1, 2, 3 seasons, but it's just not an effective model for casting anymore for live stream shows or for broadcast shows.
Well, that's actually a perfect segue into what I wanted to discuss next. You're really setting me up well here. So I wanted to talk about this choosing hosts, choosing streaming talent, because I agree with you. You know, from our perspective, and I think I probably mentioned this in the panel too, is just that, you know, I've seen, live streaming platforms who, you know, bring on talent from elsewhere. And, you know, sometimes that doesn't go, you know, they pay them a lot of money because they have a large audience, but then, you know, this person is not very good at live streaming. So then they really don't bring the, you know, results that the platform is expecting. And so I think that probably for you, it's what you're talking about is a similar situation, that just because this person has followers doesn't mean they can translate those followers into, you know, onto your platform or fans of what you're doing.
Exactly.
So I kind of want to talk about this in two different ways. So I want to know from your experience, you know, the I guess brands, shows, events, whatever, that your clients, how do they typically choose a host? You know, what makes them choose one host over another, you know, host or participant, whatever, you know, talent. And then I want to hear, in your opinion, what makes a good host, a good guest, a good talent to bring on? So I would kind of like to address that in two different ways.
So there are two different avenues. for fully produced live streams, I've found that typically the executive producers like to find hosts who have broadcast experience, right? That are good with an IFB, that won't get thrown off and can answer, that can ask the hard-hitting questions or get people to feel comfortable enough around them to where they can get whatever piece they want to get out of the rundown, right? That's one way that I've seen executive producers hire a host. Now, a second way that I've seen is based off of influence. So this person has, you know, 100 million followers, or this person has, you know, 6 million followers. They should host the show. And what happens in those situations 9 times out of 10? Can you guess, Lauren?
They don't do a very good job of it.
Exactly. Because it's like, this person who has all these followers, they should host this. And then you get them in the camera and they're like a deer in headlights. What do you think of that is pretty accurate. That's a pretty accurate representation of what's happened in the past. I'm not going to say all influencers. I mean, there are clearly a lot of people with talent. Some people's talent lies in, you know, doing makeup tutorials that can be edited. And some people's talent lies in dancing or singing, but not those talents don't necessarily translate into hosting a show. And the quality of the show definitely is hit when you don't take the time to really find someone that is a perfect match. And you can simply do that by bringing them in and have them, you know, host something, like have them be with the executive producer for half a day or, you know, kind of have to prove themselves. And I think that that's one thing that we might be I'm hoping we're shifting toward is needing to actually go through an audition process and sit through. I'm not speaking for anything scripted. I'm speaking for live. A lot of times it's like, okay, this checks off a box. We have an influencer. We're going to automatically have these views and that's done. Right. And I think it's important to bring in the potential talent to sit down and really get a sense of their capabilities, because if they can't handle an IFB or if they can't handle interviewing without editing, then that becomes a problem. Because there's a lot of people on YouTube or Instagram for that matter, that are great, but how many takes did it take for them to get there?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I think that those are the two avenues that I've seen. Is they'll hire someone with broadcast experience who's very capable. Sometimes that also doesn't translate though into a digital audience,
they're probably too formal.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I guess what they're probably looking for too is they're hoping that if you choose someone that has the skills, they might not have a following, and they're hoping to. That hiring someone with a following will bring the audience for
exactly and
the show.
I've worked on several shows where influencers have been brought on for several different aspects, and I think when the shows think that bringing on an influencer in any capacity is going to translate directly into views, it's setting yourself up for failure right off the bat.
Why is that?
Because it doesn't necessarily translate. Like if let's say X show that's about, I don't know, I'm not even gonna name anything, but X show wants to hire an influencer to do something that's out of their realm. Let's say it's a makeup, this is a show about swimming, and this person is a makeup blogger, and you bring the makeup blogger into the show about swimming, that skill doesn't translate. And so the people that are watching them because they want makeup tutorials, they're not coming over to watch the person swim. not all of them at least. And so I think that they're in the past, I have worked with some shows and clients that have expected those to directly correlate. And that's not always the case, or that's frequently not the case, I should say.
Right. So they need to definitely make sure that the influencer that they're working with, that what they're known for, kind of their subject matter, is directly related to the content of this show, or, exactly. You know, that they are, you know, for example, if it's a, let's say like Game of Thrones, you know, maybe this influencer, they could be a fashion blogger, but maybe they talk about Game of Thrones a lot. Like, I have some fashion bloggers that I follow that are always talking about like The Bachelor and The Bachelorette. So for them to go on and do like a live show to talk about The Bachelor and The Bachelorette would like make sense, because they always talk about it. Whenever it's on, they're posting about it in their Instagram stories and they're giving their commentary on it. So that would work perfectly because everybody's already used to that type of content. Exactly. And obviously they're posting about it because people are engaging with it. They wouldn't keep doing it every episode if their followers weren't engaging in it. So if you see somebody that's already kind of giving their live commentary about your show, then that makes sense.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. That's exactly what I mean. And I think that it's tempting. I mean, I get it from a business perspective. You're like, well, you know, I have marketing dollars to spend and this person already has X amount of followers. This is an easier spend. But if it's not a focused spend, then you're not getting that return.
Exactly. I also want to clarify, and I probably should have clarified this like way earlier on in the episode, but when you're doing a lot of these collaborations, whether it's event, TV, movie, where is this live streaming being broadcast to? Is it going on Facebook? Is it going on where? What platforms is it typically being shown on?
Several different platforms. Like I've done anything you can imagine, really, but usually through their own streaming site. So they'll have a site set up where they either, it's a ticketed type of situation where you have to buy a ticket to watch the stream, or it's on YouTube or on Facebook Live and it's a fully broadcast show, or something as simple as, like, you know, some of the celebrities I work with go on Instagram Live, but I make sure that there's always a reason and a breakdown of time. So, for example, there's a celebrity that I work with that when we do Instagram Lives, it's 2 minutes of, hey, how's everyone doing? This is what I've been up to, blah, blah, blah. Then two more minutes of like kind of showing around. If it's a behind the scenes thing, it's like, this is my trailer. This is what I'm shooting. I'm playing this character, blah, blah, blah. And then 2 minutes at the end or 5 minutes at the end of Q&A with fans. And so you have a loosely produced live stream. There are people who get on Instagram Live or they'll start a YouTube stream or something or Facebook Live, and they don't have anywhere to go after the first 3 minutes. And there's no structure, and it just, there's this awkward, like, lingering moment where it's like, oh, am I going to continue to watch? Are you going to continue to live stream? What's going on here? But I think if there's a clear direction, there's never awkward lulls in conversation. People feel like they're getting value out of it. And that's the most important part, is that people feel like they're getting value out of your live stream.
So I want to kind of wrap things up by, you know, just giving you an opportunity to, you know, are there any other common misperceptions that brands might have about live streaming? Or are there any other, you know, other questions that you frequently get asked when you're working with clients, or, you know, anything that you're constantly having to train people about? Just kind of want to, you know, give you the floor to share anything else that you feel like people really should know.
I think that there's a misconception that live streaming has to be this elaborate thing. It doesn't. I have worked with clients that have every camera imaginable, and microphone and the highest end sets and everything. And then I've also worked on sets where I hand an iPhone over on a selfie stick and give it to talent to use. Again, I think it really, to drive this point home, it's about the value you add, and it's about what you can provide, what experience you can provide someone that has a device in their hand and is interested in what you do. And not to be in spaces, not to force yourself into spaces. Everyone's on Instagram. We need to be on Instagram. Everyone's on this, you know, everyone's on TikTok. We need to be on TikTok. Everyone's live streaming about X, Y, and Z. We need our own live stream show. I think it's important to sit down, think about the intentions, and really create a show. I say show, but, you know, a live stream experience that encapsulates that viewer at home. Because ultimately, what are you doing it for? Are you doing it to stand in the forest and yell at the trees? Or are you doing it to actually have people engage with you, your brand, and learn from one another? I think that's an important part too. There were several instances where the fans at home often had great ideas because they were obsessed with the celebrities that we had on our show, or they were obsessed with a certain aspect of the brand, and so they had their own ideas of things that they wanted to see, which often shaped our show. And I think that that's the space where you want to be. You want to be at a point where fans feel seen, they feel heard, and they feel like they're an integral part of the show. Because ultimately, those are your consumers. And if they don't feel valued, they don't feel like they're getting value, then, you know, it's a ticking time bomb to when you're done.
Those are all some really great points. And I think to your last one, you know, like we've been saying this entire time, the interaction is what makes live streaming. So that should be, like you said, the key focus as opposed to the technology. You know, the technology is important. Obviously, you want like clear video and stuff. But as far as like how professional the setup needs to be and everything, that should be like, it sounds like that should be your secondary concern, and that how you're going to get the audience involved, how you're going to interact with them and provide them value should really be your first consideration when planning a live streaming experience.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. As I said, I think that this is definitely a different perspective than we've had on the podcast so far. And I think that people are going to find it really interesting to see how live streaming is being used in this context. So thank you again for coming on. If people want to reach out to you or find more about what you're up to, what's the best way for them to get in touch?
Well, I definitely want to thank you for having me on. This was a great experience, and I always love talking to you. And I think if anyone wants to ask me any questions, wants to reach out, at Roberto Quinn on Instagram is probably the best, or roberto@quinnsocial.com.
Okay, I'll be sure to add those in the show notes. Well, thank you so much again for coming on. Thank you, Roberto.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Stream Wars. To get our guests' contact info, as well as links to all of the things that we mentioned in the episode, you can find them in the show description, or you can check out the show notes on themeatgroup.com/blog. Thanks, and talk to you next time.